Hi, and welcome to the Japan Baseball Weekly Podcast for October 1st. It's brought to you by Shooters in Nagoya. I'm John Gibson in Southern California, and with me is Jim Allen. How you doing, buddy?
Well, I'm in cyberspace. We're both in cyberspace. I'm good. We're having a typhoon, which is, although it's quieted down, I think it's gone.
Good.
So I'll be the only hot air.
Or the only blowhard.
The only blowhard, yes. We had with Bruce Willis, and we had a blowhard with Jim Allen.
Well, yeah, I missed all the typhoon excitement here in Southern California. It's beautiful.
Oh, well, yeah, you didn't want to stand in line for the typhoon, so you just went to Southern California. Okay, I hear you.
I took off, and I missed some games, but I was at the airport on Friday night listening up until the time that they told me that the mean, what do you call them, cabin something, whatever they are, the stewardess and stewardesses told me to turn off my electrical devices.
Steward eye.
What's that?
Cabin crew.
Cabin crew, yeah, they told me to turn off my electrical devices, but the Lions had already fallen behind, and I was wondering how they were going to finish. And you're right, I got off at the airport at LAX, and I was asking people who won, the Lions or the Pirates.
Yeah, you would have been easy to spot if the police were looking for you. Just look for the large black man asking people for questions about Japanese baseball, and you'll have your man.
Well, I'm not that large over here. All right, this week we've got an interview with Daryl Rasner of the Rakuten Eagles. We're going to discuss the WBC and touch on some other topics with a scratchy voice. So let's start clearing the bases. All right, so as you can tell, I did a little bit of yelling last night. So
What's up with that?
I did a lot of yelling.
Wow.
And I wasn't even angry. I wasn't screaming at the TV or screaming at you or...
One, just listeners, John doesn't really get... He doesn't raise his voice. He doesn't get angry. He doesn't scream. The only time I've ever heard him scream is when an umpire robs the Dragons. Or somebody else. He's not 100%. You know, he's not a homer to that degree. If somebody gets robbed, he's out there screaming at the umpire.
That's right. So,
in terms of really with people screaming, no, doesn't happen.
And they don't even have to be replacement umpires. I just I scream at umpires on occasion. I have been known to know to jump on an umpire here and there.
I don't think we want to hear that.
Nice. All right, so a couple weeks ago when I talked to Josh Weitzel of the Lawton Marines, I also went to the other side and got to talk to Daryl Rasner of the Rakuten Eagles. He's the guy who keeps fooling them.
Yeah, well, he does indeed, and I expected him to use, that's Daryl's catchphrase. And if you're in Japan, you have to have a catchphrase. In fact, if you don't have a catchphrase, you're on the next plane out of Japan. when you ask, you know, how is everything going, he says, I'm still fooling them. That's his explanation for his longevity in Japan, that he's been able to fool them all this time. So,
and he hasn't done a bad job. I mean, he's been pretty effective this year, and I think he's one of the reasons that bullpen has been fairly steady. I mean, it hasn't been great. It hasn't been a great bullpen for them, but it's been fairly steady. It's been adequate. Their run production has been up and down. Their lineup has been up and down. But he's been a steady part of that bullpen, I think, and that's why they were in contention. They were, before the All-Star break, you know, they had a spot in third place, looked like they were going to be a playoff team. Then they had a bad stretch, and they've fallen out, and they've fallen, and they can't get up. They can't get back into third place.
Yeah, well, that's the Eagles for you. They've been an interesting team all year, but the bullpen has been, Jim Heuser has been, when he's been healthy, he's been good, for the most part. He had some real rough spots in the middle of the season, and he was allowed to iron them out on the farm team, I guess. And, I know Raz went down for a bit.
Yep.
Foreign players have been in and out pretty much like a revolving door.
Yeah.
I know Brett Harper. has spent most of his time with the Eagles on the in the Eastern League.
Yep, yep. He came and he went. But I remember when Rasner got here, and, you know, thanks to Iwakoshi-san of Rakuten Eagles, he's one of the guys who works in the PR department, we got to sit down for 10 minutes and do a chat for our now-defunct baseball special.
Remember those?
Yeah. And Daryl was very accommodating, and we had a good chat. We just didn't get enough information to do the article that I originally wanted to do, but we did get some. And I remember Katsuya Nomura was his manager at the time, and I remember, I think it was his second season, Daryl's second season. And you know how Nomura used to come in and do these stand-up comedy press conferences after games, especially home games?
Sit-down comedy, because he would sit there on a stool and drink his water and everybody was supposed to stand around him. Yeah, but we get the drift.
Yeah, and I remember he ripped on Raz one time after one of his starts, saying, look, this guy, he's a big guy. Why doesn't he throw harder than he throws? And, you know, that was Nomura's thing, was to chide people, especially the foreign players. And I think they just didn't translate a lot of the stuff. Maybe that's how he got away with it, because you would think some of these foreign players would turn around and bop him on the head one time or kick him in one of those bad knees.
Well, they would be, you know, they'd be up for charges of elder abuse if they did that. And I think nobody really takes it too seriously, because it's sort of his shtick, you know. It's like when he comes on TV and say, this guy's no good and this guy's no good. And, he means it. But I can't say what he means, because, you know, he'll say one thing one day and something else the next day. He's a real smart guy. As far as it's just abusing the players, I think it's more or less, it's half in jest.
Mm-hmm.
And then the rest of it is sort of divided between something. There's a kernel of truth that can be very subtle and very interesting and very important. And then the other is just being annoyed at nobody being as smart as he is.
And he's trying to be Mr. Funny Man, you know.
He's a hoot.
Yeah. And some of them were funny. I mean, I have to admit, I would tune in to see just what he was going to say. Whether they had won or lost, he had some one-liner somewhere.
Okay.
But Daryl struggled that first year, as you will hear in the interview him say. He had an ERA of over 6, and then even in his second season, his ERA was close to 5 or 4.5. But once he went to the bullpen, I think he found a niche, and you'll hear him talk about essentially how he's whittled down his repertoire of pitches and focused on getting good movement and location. So let's go ahead and hear what he's got to say.
All right, I'm here with Daryl Rasner with the Rakuten Eagles. I met you 4 years ago when you just got off the plane, and and now we're finally meeting up again. How's it going?
Good, good. It has been a while, and, just trying to get by here, trying to learn every day, really just trying to get by.
Yeah, aren't we all? Aren't we all? Now, you came here from an organization, the New York Yankees, that is decorated in history and everything. You came to an organization that was fairly new. What were the differences that you experienced when you came over, other than culture?
Just the style of baseball here, you know. Not necessarily this organization itself, but just Japanese baseball in general. Just, trying to get used to the small ball and little things of guys bunting in the first inning and really just learning the different batters and how to pitch to guys and trying to be successful. That first year was a rough one for me. It was a tough learning experience. But, the organization was grateful enough to have me back. I really just want to pay him back and do well. So trying to learn the game still here as I go every day. Talked with the pitching coach today and each day trying to learn something.
What was your biggest adjustment that first year?
Just, in the States, we're taught to throw strikes, fill up the strike zone. You want to try and get out with every pitch you throw, whereas here, guys are so aggressive, and when they do see something in the zone, all their whole thing is just trying to hit the ball and use their speed. That's their game. So, for me, able to throw balls and learn a fork ball, that's really helped me.
Now, it's your fourth year. How do you assess your career here with the Eagles?
I wish it could be a little better. I mean, I think everybody does. Again, the first year was rough. Second year, again, was still learning, learning the hitters, learning myself still. You know, last year was a little better. I had a more consistent year. But overall, you know, I wish it could be better. I wish I could do more to help. You know, I'm learning some different roles. Last year I was a closer, and this year, part of this year, I was a closer until I got hurt. You know, so learning new roles has been different. But, you know, again, trying to do my best to help these guys and you know, just have a successful time over here.
Yeah, you did begin your career here as a starter. And how did you end up landing in the bullpen?
I got hurt. It was last year I got hurt, and we needed a bullpen guy. A guy went down. We needed a bullpen guy, late seventh inning guy. So I was able to do it one day. The next day I was able to turn around and get it saved the very next day. So, you know, I was lucky enough for them to have the trust in me to do that. It's a big job here anywhere. And, you know, I was lucky to have that job last year. It was a fun job.
Now, how did your pitching change as a result of going to the bullpen?
I really tried to, you know, really focus on two, sometimes three pitches, you know, throw strikes with those, as opposed to having, you know, all the different pitches as a starter, different looks. So really just trying to hone those pitches and you know, getting outs that way.
Now, you don't have a blazing fastball. Did you try to rely on pinpointing the pitches and working on the data and figuring out where guys had weak spots and attacking those zones?
Yeah, you know, that helped me from coming to the States. You know, it doesn't really matter how hard you throw in the States and coming here. I've really never been caught up in the radar gun, so I've always tried to hit spots, change speeds, you know, move guys' feet, make them uncomfortable. So that has helped, but you know, my velocity has gone up a little bit now that I've only having to throw one inning. So, but again, that's not my game. My game is locating, keeping the ball down, and just changing speeds.
Keep pulling them up.
Trying.
Now the Eagles have a lot of young pitchers. Who do you think has the most potential out of that group?
We got a really good group. You know, you got Tanaka, you got Kawashima, Kamata. You know, there's some good players here. You know, not only pitchers, there's some good catcher. I mean, Okajima. You know, we got a really solid minor league system, and the guys are coming up now and helping us out. So I really think this organization's going in the right direction. You know, and I think they're going to be a force to be reckoned with here in a couple of years.
Yeah, since you're a pitcher, I'm wondering, who do you think is the best out of that group?
I've always really liked Kawashima. I liked him when he first came up, 2010. I thought he had some guts. I remember when he first came up, he came in and relieved the game for me, and it was, I can't remember what the exact situation was, but I remember it being bases loaded, I think, and 3-2 count, and he throws just an unbelievable, the guy throws a great changeup, but he throws a changeup 3-2 in that count, and we kept the lead because of it. And you know, ever since, I've really been impressed with how he goes about his business. He's really smart. I enjoy watching him pitch.
Okay. All right, good. Now, this team for a while was in third place, dropped down to fourth, even fifth for a while. Have you guys underachieved or overachieved, or are you right where you thought you might be?
You know, coming in, I didn't, you know, reading the papers and stuff, I saw how everyone was ranking teams. I saw that we were towards the bottom. You know, this team is always, it's a good team with a good group. I think we've been a little inconsistent this year. I think we could be doing better. You know, we're real streaky, I guess I should say. You know, when we do put it together, we're a tough team to beat. Not many teams can beat us. You know, we have great pitching, great infield, defense, everything. So once we just put those things together, I think we're going to be fine. But, you know, a little more consistent, I think we're there.
All right, now this team has done okay, but what team in the Pacific League did something you really didn't expect from them, that you're kind of surprised that they're where they are?
Oryx. I thought Oryx was going to be a lot better than they were this year.
You too, huh? No, I had them finish second.
You know, with that lineup, I saw the guys they picked up. I saw their pitching. I thought that was going to be the team to beat this year. And, you know, it really surprised me still to this day.
Me too, buddy. But I don't know, it happens to the best of us and the worst of us. Now, what's the future for you going forward here?
The future, you know, I don't know. I really do enjoy Japan. I'd like to, I think I'd like to retire here. I'd like to finish up here. Now, I don't know where or if anybody wants me to do that. I don't know. But ideally, that's what I would like to do. But, you know, it's not up to me. So I really don't know. I'm going to worry about each day, you know, worry about tonight, and after the season, I guess we'll talk about it. I don't know. So we'll see what happens.
Okay. All right. Good luck. Hope to see you back. Hope to see your Eagles climbing up in the standings a little bit.
Thank you very much. I appreciate it.
All right. Thanks for joining us.
Thank you.
Bye-bye.
All right. Well, that was great. I'm glad we got to sit down, Daryl. Thank you very much. Much appreciated.
Well, he certainly he fooled me.
Okay. I won't say that that's easy to do, but how did he do it this time?
That's not a very nice thing to say to somebody who's been running all over Tokyo all day. I mean,
and trapped in a typhoon. I apologize. Yeah.
Typhoon. Anyway, so he fooled me because I did expect him to say I keep fooling him, and he didn't.
He didn't. Yeah, I was surprised too.
It was actually what I was listening for, and at the end, I got to the end, and I think, oh, just what did he just say? He never said I was fooling him. Anyway, so yeah, Daryl's a great guy, and he's just a, you know, it's just command for him. I knew he was working on issues. We talked a little bit, in fact, about exactly what you said, that, you know, he spent a lot of time in the bullpen working on different, on his command.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't see him, you know, whittling him down his repertoire or something. I guess he meant that figuratively. I didn't see him with a knife or nothing, but,
Right. Well, just like Tony Barnett, to me, he's a guy who, and Tony Barnett, he was a recent guest on the show. He's a guy who didn't work out here as a starter, but he found effectiveness by just limiting the kinds of pitches that he threw and focusing on hitting spots. And like he said in the interview, moving guys' feet and keeping them off balance, which is important. So throwing in both sides of the plate, getting that, you know, finding a good zone for him in terms of control, you know, what he's comfortable throwing in certain situations. And again, he said, finding ways to pitch to these Japanese hitters whose approach was so different from what he had, you know, what he had been used to. But he also, what surprised me, what he said here, which is what we know all along, is that guys, and we're talking about pitchers, he had to learn how to throw out of the strike zone.
Right.
He, you know, in the States, and this is what something that Rick Short, a former Lexington Eagle player, told me before. He said guys in the States are taught to pound the strike zone. Now, whether it's different areas of the strike zone, or whether it's whether they're trying to pitch a certain player a certain way, they hit the strike zone. And here they teach guys to throw out of the zone constantly.
Right.
And it's something that he had to learn, which was kind of interesting to hear him say that he struggled with that.
Yeah, it is. Well, it's a different philosophy, and certainly you have to go through that. And of course, the reason for that is it was the great one that I heard. Well, I read Koji Akiyama talking about Mr. Doyle, his new big new pitcher, who has only pitched twice as far as I know. Was that the guy will have to learn what pitches Japanese batters swing at, which ones they lay off that they don't lay off in the States, because that's a whole window for you that you need to be able to exploit.
Mm-hmm.
Because those you used to exploit don't exist anymore, so you have to find new openings and make those adjustments. And sometimes it's easy. Depends how flexible you are mentally, I think.
Right, and, you know, that's a struggle for some guys who are used to, I mean, sometimes batters can be stupid, and I heard a recent interview on another more famous podcast with Mitch Williams, the famous left-hander who gave up a home run to Joe Carter in a World Series. I forgot what year that was, but I'm sure Mike and Tokorozawa knows because he's a big Toronto Blue Jays fan. But Mitch Williams said, hey, look, he knew that he could go out there in the ninth inning, and he could roll the ball up there four times and get guys to swing at it because they wanted to read their names in the paper. And it was more about ego. And it's not like that in Japan.
It's not. And certainly the game is different. You get the guys who are, you know, there's 100 reasons why you have to work outside of the zone. Is one reason is if you work outside of the zone long enough, the umpires will think you're throwing strikes.
And then John will be upset and he'd be yelling at umpires.
Oh, no, never happened. Say such a thing. Anyway, so that's one possibility. And the other one is that because, as a couple of people have pointed out, they're just so good at fouling off pitches. You know, there's all these dichotomies between the Japanese game and the American game. And You know, they play little ball in Japan, and they do this and they do that, and they lead with the breaking, you know, they lead with breaking pitches before they go to the fastball very often. The breaking pitch is the pitch of decision so often in Japan.
Mm-hmm.
And I think these things complement each other, right? I don't mean complement as in, you know, they're good, but it's sort of hard to separate all the variables. You know, do they play little ball because of this? Do they play little ball because of that? It's hard to say. It's sort of like a stone wall where all the, you know, the stones look like they're in a random pattern, but they also
somehow fit together. Yeah.
And they support each other, and it's hard to say where the pattern starts. You know, does it start with this rock or that rock? Because they all mesh together. You know, do they play little ball because they slap at the ball? Do they play little ball because the umpires, you know, have a strike zone the size of Montana?
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's hard to take a full swing when, you know, the strike zone is really, really big. Because you have to be able to cover the strike zone when you got two strikes on you, and it seems you've always got two strikes on you. I say that figuratively. I know that's not true. It is hard on the pitchers as well, and pitchers do get squeezed sometimes. It's not, you know, umpires are fallible, but, you know, there's all these things going on that lead to the game, and there's the mindset too, which is that the real game, Japanese baseball's real game, is getting on base and bunting guys around and doing what you're told to do.
Well, the real game to me, I think, is not necessarily getting it to the big guy. In the States, we try to get guys on, but we want to get the big swingers up with two guys on, and we want the three-run home run. And they don't play that way here. They want to get it to the next guy. Get it to the next guy.
Right, right, right. And there was you know, they have the expression in Japan is tsunaideru, which is basically connect the rally, you know, connecting the elements of a big inning. And players talk about that. They basically mean either A, bunting, improving the base situation, or getting a hit. But it generally means the whole concept is you're playing for the team, you're hitting behind the runner, which is a very valuable thing, and you're being unselfish. And when one game with the Marines, a player said, I don't remember whether it was the Marines or just me talking to Valentine, the manager of the Marines, a reporter asked him if he didn't want, okay, this is, let me put the situation, there's a runner on first, and the guy run, and the reporter asks Bobby, didn't you want him just to improve the chances of scoring a run by stringing, you know, putting together a rally?
Mm-hmm.
And the whole concept is that you put the team in a better position to win incrementally. And he said, look, hit a two-run home run, you put the team in a better position to win. What do you want? What's the question? I don't understand.
Exactly. Yeah, and I mean, you know, there's the other expression, zen yakyu, which is, you know, playing all together as a team, everybody contributing. And I think that's the main thing is that, you know, no one guy is supposed to stand out. But then they do have guys who they know are long ball hitters. Power hitters, and they do try to get it to those particular guys. But in the meantime,
they just don't talk about doing it.
They just don't talk about them doing it. But in the meantime, everybody's supposed to get it to the next guy up there, and they play that kind of game. Now, I was surprised about the fact that he picked out Karashima as the guy who, you know, with all those talented pitchers they have, his name is Wataru, right? Wataru Karashima. He picked him out as the pitcher he's most impressed with. Now, the thing that stuck with me was that it seemed like he remembered him because he came in and helped preserve one of his wins.
Well, you know, what that proves? Raz is a human being and he's a loyal guy. Somebody bailed him out and he's sticking with him.
Yeah, but I really like Yoshinao Kamata. I think he's going to be the guy who, when Ma-kun talks about retirement or going to the States or whatever he does, I think he's going to be the next guy to step up for him. I'm surprised Takahiro Shiomi, a guy I liked a little bit for Rookie of the Year last year, I don't know why he's been so ineffective, and I think he got injured too. I know he hasn't been on the first team for a while. So Kenji Tomura, another guy I'm expecting things from, because Daryl talked about the guts of Karashima, and I think Tomura had that. At least he had the attitude. He had the right attitude. And then Manabu Mima, I like him as well. I don't know that he's going to be a guy who fits in the rotation. But they have some really nice pieces that if they get it together, and, you know, Daryl talked about the fact that they were a little bit inconsistent this year. I'm not sure if it was inconsistency or, to be honest, teams being better than they were. But they're going to be a hard-to-beat rotation in 2-3 years, I think. They're going to have...
Well, I do really like Mima. I do like Karashima. He's when we were talking about this in May, I think, you know, I asked myself who are the young players in Japan who are really, really have a chance to step up. Karashima was one of the players whose name popped out. I don't remember if he, you know, he was one of the top guys when I sifted through the names, but he was one of the guys who popped out. Based on a very limited amount of playing time and his age. So, yeah, I like him. I like Mima quite a bit. Shiomi's just had a year where he hasn't – I haven't heard one word about injury. He was deactivated on June 17th due to poor form. So he started the 3 months on the first team.
Mm-hmm.
And then he was brought back 11 days later, and 2 weeks later he was deactivated, and he was brought back 13 days later, and a week later he was deactivated, and then a month passed, and he's activated again. Now he's active. So I don't know. He sounds like a bomb disposal experiment or something.
Yeah. He sounds like he's on the elevator, up and down. But I really liked him last year, even though he had a propensity to give up hits to a lot of left-handed batters. I didn't mind it, but I think he stopped getting the right-handers out, too, this year, so that was part of his problem.
When you don't get it, yeah.
That is a problem. But, you know, Kamata looks like he could be the guy. He's just an 18-year-old kid. I have some high expectations for him as well. I really like him, but I'll take Daryl's evaluation of Karashima to heart. We're hoping that, I mean, Makun has been, he's had the bad back, he's had his, you know, shoulder issue this season, and he's still the man on that rotation and on that team. I hope.
He's been wildly inconsistent this year, and you don't know how much, you know, there's basically two things. You know, in several players' opinion, he has the best slider in Japan.
Yep.
He does not have the Yu Darvish arsenal. He also has a great build. You know, he's a big, powerful guy.
Mm-hmm.
You like that. But all the injuries, you know, you have to ask: is this something? Is there a pattern here? He hadn't been injured before, I think last, and now he's just kind of fallen apart, and he's just inconsistent. And you want to know, you really want to know, is are the injuries a long-term issue that is going to dog him the rest of his career because of the heavy workload, which, you know, nobody wants to see, or are they just random, unrelated accidents?
Yeah, I think the workload has been – he's pitched some tough innings. I mean, he doesn't always face – situations where he's got bases loaded every inning, but he does put in some tough innings and some high stress innings in games where they don't score. He hasn't had a lot of easy wins, and you know that's just stressful. It's stressful mentally.
I heard pretty much all the commentators, the analysts I talked to, get very frustrated with watch games because every time he gets into trouble, it's predictable: slider, 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 and you know he'll have games. He throws 60 or 70 sliders, and, you know, people cringe, you know, and they tell me that because they think it's going to ruin his arm. I mean, he's going to have an oddly shaped arm probably by the time he retires. but is it really a problem? I don't know. I'm not a biomechanics person, so I can't really answer that question, but we hope not. But, yeah, he has been dogged by a lot of injuries. The bad back and this and that. So it's not a good sign.
Yeah, and that's part of the, I mean, I'm really surprised that they contended as long as they did with their ace only getting, I think at this point, 21 starts. I have to admit, obviously, since I traveled, that I don't know what happened in the weekend games. I only looked at the Fighters and Lions stuff as I was en route. But it's hard to be consistent when your ace starts 21 times and, you know, you've had a lot of guys that go through the rotation, a lot of unproven guys. But the one thing they've done this year is they've let a lot of young players play, like Ginji Akaminai, guys like that who have produced for them. So the inconsistency comes along with playing these unproven guys, but you get some production out of them sometimes and you don't other times. But, I mean, that's the price you pay for playing these young players.
They had a couple of things. It's kind of funny. They played badly early in the season when Makun was pitching well. And then he went down with his bad back, and all of a sudden they caught fire pretty much right as soon as he left.
Yeah.
And that, a couple of things happened there. One is Kelvin Jimenez, who
was
brilliant, and then he just disappeared.
Yep.
He had a swollen middle finger in his left hand in July and was deactivated. They brought him back in August, and he couldn't really pitch.
Mm.
So back down. So that was one thing. He was brilliant in July. He was brilliant in May and June. And what else was going right for them? Another thing is the beginning of the season, Tepe Tsuchiya, who was kind of had a horrible season last year.
Yeah, he found himself.
Well, yeah, he found himself. Somebody mailed him a care package, and there he was. There, his swing was in a box somewhere because he was struggling. He had a kind of a nagging injury, but he's one of these. He's kind of a quiet guy. He doesn't talk much, and I doubt if he was hurt, he'd just prefer to play until someone forced him to sit down.
Mm-hmm.
You know, nailed his cleats to the floor of the dugout, maybe, because he was standing out there in right field when somebody else was named in the lineup.
He'd go out there with no cleats.
Yeah, they sent him down, and he needed whatever it was. That's what he needed, because he came back and he just started ripping up the Pacific League, as he does when he's healthy. So a lot of things like that, you know, turned around. They had Shintaro Masuda, and you know, all these guys that sort of, you know, are playing out of their socks. You know, they were just amazing, and now they've come back down. On the other hand, Kazuo Matsui has had a very solid season.
He's had a very consistent season, yeah.
Iwamura has been hurt. He's been hurt really for much of all of his time with Rakuten. He had a couple of good games in there, but I think he's back down again. So yeah, it is frustrating, and it's the young guys, and it's the pitching inconsistency. And I does it go back to Tanaka? Well, you know, you can only play, and I think we're seeing this with the Cebu Lions. You can only play with so many guys hurt and out.
Right, and then it catches up to you.
You can string guys together, and you can get by on guts, because as they say, the guy says in Full Metal Jacket, you know, he's ignorant, but he's got guts, and sometimes guts is enough.
Yeah.
That's a little while, but...
Yeah, it doesn't. It's not long lasting. So, yeah, I was also surprised by the fact that Daryl, when I asked him what team surprised him in the Pacific League, that he said it was Oryx. And I'm laughing because I blurted out right away was, yeah, I picked him to finish second place just because I wanted to go out on a limb, as people might, listeners might recall, but that was the reason. I didn't really pick him because I believed in him so much, but he was really surprised that with the additions that they made to the lineup and the pitching that we had seen, that they're in last place. And of course, that's turned into a big disaster down in Oryx with the manager essentially being booted out. And I don't even know why he left before the end of the season. And his excuse of, what was his excuse? I want them to be able to start fresh right away and point or look toward next year now. And so he just stepped down and stopped managing games. I'm like, what is this? You don't hear about that in Japan.
This was pretty odd. Well, I think the biggest...
He pulled a Terry Collins, essentially, right?
Yes and no. Yes and no. I'm not going to comment on that, but it occurred to me that, you know, Oryx has had a flaw. They had a ton of injury. Essentially, the media and the front office blamed Okada for trying to make the Oryx into the Hanshin Tigers, which which is sort of like saying, I don't know what, the Oryx Buffaloes have some very serviceable talent. But they said that, you know, he tried to hammer the square peg into the round hole, that they weren't going to be the Buffaloes. Essentially, they said that by trying to use every pitcher he had in the roster to try out every audition, every pitcher he had for the role of ace reliever trio, and this was his baby with Hanshin, and this was not a Senichi Hoshino thing. This was Okada's thing. Move all these guys out of the starting rotation, other than move Kuji Fujikawa, who was a washed-up starter, and Tomoyuki Kubota, who was not a bad starter. Move them out of the starting rotation and just say, look, sons, you're going to be relievers, and then we're going to put Jeff Williams in there because he was really good in 2003, and it's going to get the job done. They did the job for like 4 years. And they basically said that he spent all his time tinkering with the bullpen and moving rotation starters out to try them on in relief roles. I'm not buying that. It's, you know, it smacks of being too simplistic. And Okada, he has this sort of everyman working class, I'm an Osaka boy, you know.
Exactly, yeah.
But he's not a dummy. He's a run-of-the-mill ordinary guy. He's not stupid. I think what happened was they had injuries in the bullpen, and they've had injuries in the rotation, and nobody has been able to stick with the program in that starting rotation. Pretty much everybody, I don't think it was all the team's metal that caused them, you know, to be activating and deactivating guys, you know, shuffling their rotation like a deck of cards. But other than Kisanuki, who else? You know, it's been Kisanuki and whoever they can find.
Yeah, whoever they can find. Nakayama has pitched a little bit for him. You know, our friend Evan McClain pitched a little bit in spot starts here and there, and didn't even know his role, essentially, when we did the interview with him earlier this year. They just underperformed in some areas. They were injured in some area or at some times, and they've just been ineffective in other times. But they've had some offense. It seemed like they've had the guys, they have had a lineup that's produced runs, but then when you look up, they don't have that many runs. They don't have that many. They don't have a great ERA. They really haven't done that much, and that's why you find them in last place.
I mean, they are the prototypical Oryx Buffaloes. They got all the, you know, you look at them and you see, I look at them and I see, okay, Keiji Obiki. Yeah, I really want another shortstop. I guess he's the answer to the other question about who is the most the current player who's most like the shortstop of Randy Bass's Tigers. And I was thinking of Shingo Kawabata, but I think Obiki pretty much fills that hole too. He's a guy who can field. Well, I guess he's a good fielder. I'll give him credit. He is a good fielder, but he can't hit. He just never has developed into a hitter that they thought he would be.
Yeah, I mean, his best year in terms of offensive production, I think, was that first year. And then since then, he's just been inconsistent and not very good.
He's been kind of a mystery. Okada's been hurt a lot. Now, he's a guy they really count on to produce runs. And
T.O.
Yeah.
T.O., I call him, yeah.
He's had hamstring troubles all this year. He's changed his batting. Since he came back, and that's helped. Then they were missing, you know, they had the great lead. I don't know why a lot of people didn't like him. There's always an Oryx. What do you know? There's always an Oryx Buffalo outfielder that I just think is you know, it's just the cat's meow, and nobody else knows his name.
And who is it? Who is it this year?
Oh well, no, it was for a while. It was until he just got too good for everybody not, you know, to ignore. But they had a few guys. I mean, I liked Yuichiro Mukai as well, and now he's with Hiroshima. They traded him away for Go Kido, which go figure.
nice. Yeah, I mean, they were shocking. I predicted the Hawks would make the playoffs, and I think they're right there in terms of where I expected them to be, even though they dropped off. You know, they lost the top half of their rotation, and they still are pretty good.
You'd have to work on your math, your fractions there. They lost 3 out of 5.
Well, they had 6 guys. I mean, they...
Okay, well, you can name the other 3 guys, Setsu and who? Bing, time's up. Okay.
Bing, time's up. I ask a question and Bing, time's up.
That's the way it works. Life's not fair, man. Okay, you got a pitch, okay, and
Otanari pitched last year.
I think, you know, as the other 3 guys, the last 2 guys, right? I mean, it was Kitchen Sink City, but, you know, they just kept throwing guys out there and they kept winning games.
Yeah, I mean, Hiroki Yamada pitched a lot for them. They had a 6-man rotation. It was just that 6-man was always a different one.
But anyway, yeah, and it seemed like, okay, anyway, good. So that they've done well. I mean, they've done well with what they had.
But, you know, the Lions and Fighters, and of course, yeah, I picked the Lions at the beginning of the season, and then a couple weeks ago or 3 weeks ago, I said I think the Fighters have better starting pitching, and that might push them to the championship. And it turns out, you know, when they had their big series about 10 days ago, it was Nogami pitching against Yoshikawa, and the Lions won that matchup, and that, you know, on paper, you don't give them the advantage in that situation, but they won 2 out of 3 in that series. But then they turn around and they lose both games in Sapporo, and now the Fighters are sitting on a magic number of 2, and looks like they're going to get the championship. But is that really the big piece of cheese in that situation? I think
piece of cheese? I don't understand.
You know the book, who's got the cheese? Is that the name of it? I can't even remember the title now. I'm glad we couldn't hear you on that one.
Okay.
But, yeah, is that the big piece of cheese? Because I think it's winning in the playoffs. I don't think – and then certainly you get set up and you have the advantages, but you still have to win these games.
The big red light going on here, the John Gibson theory, baseball theory awarding light. I think it's all about the playoffs. Yeah, okay, could be.
It could be. No, it is. It really is, and I think a team like the Giants, it's really obvious that they're the best team and that they're probably the most likely team to advance to the Japan Series. But it's because they're good. Now, in the Pacific League, you got a lot of teams that...
Go ahead.
You've got a lot of teams that are fairly evenly matched, and we've seen that play out during the season, that a lot of teams, we've had the Hawks in first place early on, we've had the Lions in first place, we've had the Fighters in first place. I don't think the Eagles ever got up to first place. Lotte was in first place for most of the first half. So you've got a lot of parity there.
Okay.
And
go ahead.
Certainly having a little of an advantage in the playoffs is going to be a big factor in who advances, because your teams are so close. But I still think you have to have experience. You have to have guys who don't panic in big situations. You have to have guys who are not afraid of the moment, you know, and these are important factors in playoff situations. And I like the Fighters, but I don't think they're a surefire. They're not like the team that we're looking at in the Central League, that even with their weaknesses and their flaws, they're much better than any other team out there. I don't think we're talking about teams like that. I think any team can win on any day, no matter what the pitching matchups look like. I think any of the teams can advance. So let's say it finishes like the standings are now, and that the Lions and Hawks are playing in that first stage of the Climax Series, I could easily see the Hawks winning. And I could see the Hawks winning at Sapporo Dome as well.
I agree with you. I was just, you know, it's just the generalization that kind of drives me.
Which you love. I know you love those things.
I do, but... You know, I want to know what the heck you're talking about, and that tends to be a more difficult question than just saying the playoffs. I would put it this way. I mean, playoff baseball and the regular season are two different demands, and not because you have to be scary or you have to be intimidating or you have to be dominating or this or that, but you have to have more frontline talent, because we're not talking about, you know, Wayne Grassick did a column in which he quoted 227 different current and former players and would-be players, who guys who wanted to be players, to say it's not a sprint, it's a marathon. Well, the playoffs are a sprint.
Yeah, definitely. It's a whole different animal.
Different animal. And so what does that mean is you need frontline talent, or, you know, you need big performances, and to get, you know, to look for big performances up and down. I mean, you can't predict who's going to have, you know, you'll have guys, you'll have the Buddy Bielankanas, you know, nobodies. You'll have the Juan Uribe.
Mm-hmm.
You know, guys who really aren't very good players, but who are very good in a very short span of time, because pretty much anybody can be good in a short period of time. But what you want is to stack the deck and have guys who are just really, really good, you know, 1-9, and blow people away, and not worry about which team has the, you know, the best pinch runners or the best defensive replacements or the best pinch hitters.
Right.
But best, you know, the Japan Series, the World Series is not a battle between who's the sixth best pitcher in your starting rotation. Because those guys aren't going to pitch. Well, they will in Japan, but that's another story. But essentially, they're not going to carry the load. So the essential pieces that help team get to the pennant in most cases are more or less irrelevant in the playoffs.
Right.
In that sense, it is a different game. Now, The Giants have the best front load. The Giants are kind of an interesting situation. They have great depth. They have
the great pitching. They have the great offensive production.
They're a little light in terms of pop coming off the bench. You know, in terms of offense coming off the bench. I guess Yoshinobu Takahashi is the guy right now coming off the bench, and you know they've got Indiano. Kame is hurt now. Ogasawara's done pretty much. He just can't play. You know, they've got a lot of defensive parts. All their offense is on the field to start the game pretty much.
Right.
But I certainly agree. Pacific League teams are the Lions. They look like a plastic model kit that they had to find replacement parts from other similar, but not exactly the same one you're looking for.
Right. Right. It's going to be a real exciting playoff. I'm going to watch every game, of course, and I'll be excited to see how it plays out. But my prediction is that every game is going to be the kind of playoff game you want to see. How's that?
I'll go for that. I mean, I've seen enough in this last 2 weeks, you know. Guys coming up big. The Fighters got a very big start. I mean, the Fighters, the day before they started the series, or 2 days before they started the series with the Lions, they had a game at Sapporo Dome against the Marines, and it was Naruse against Kazuma. And you think, well, mismatch, you know?
Right.
Kazuma pitched Naruse out of the ballpark.
Yep, yeah.
How often is that going to happen?
It happens when Itoi is hitting home runs. It happens, yeah. All right, let's talk about the WBC now. The draws were decided this past week, and Cuba is coming to Japan to play. That's going to be so awesome. I can't wait.
That is. We're going to get a lot of Cuba. We're going to have a lot of Cuba, so hopefully we'll have lots of music and black beans and all that other good stuff to go with it. Why? You have to wonder why Cuba. Why Cuba in... And of course, WBC's answer was Cuba. Somebody had to travel to Asia because we're having two pools. Pool A and B are going to both be in Asia, which is something new.
Mm-hmm.
And so, why Cuba? Why not?
Why not the United States? It would make more sense if the U.S. was coming out here, because they show these games in Japan. You know, we got cable TV. You got NHK, and you can see a lot of these players. I'm happy to see Cuba, of course, but these major league players, they're a brand out here.
Sure.
Why not?
That is interesting. That's an interesting thought. I think the reason you're going to see Cuba is for the reason that the Asian team is the Asian pool is going to start, a week earlier. The two Asian pools are going to start on March 2nd.
Mm-hmm.
And... okay, if you're a major leaguer, you know, major league team, you want to start the WBC later.
Not earlier, yes.
How many major leaguers, how many current major leaguers are what teams, how many teams have zero major leaguers on their roster guaranteed? Cuba.
Right.
Okay. So that decision there. The other team that's going to go switch places and move, not switching places, is the Netherlands. They're going to be in Pool B with Korea and Australia.
And a team to be named later. All the other teams, we still have qualifying going. Or is the qualifying over? Did I miss it?
Qualifying is not over. It doesn't start in November.
Okay.
The South American qualifying rounds, I guess, are going to be in, the Panama round, A round, are going to be in November. Now, the interesting thing about the qualifying so far, we have had two teams qualify. We've had Spain and Canada. Canada is an old hand in the World Cup, Spain in the
World Classic,
which is now officially going to be known by the IBAF as the World of National Team Baseball.
Okay.
Fast. Okay. So we got Spain, which is interesting. So some new blood there. Spain got the best of WBC regular South Africa, France, and Israel.
Mm-hmm.
And Canada beat Germany, Great Britain, and the Czech Republic, and pretty much convincingly. So now we've got the next one, which is kind of interesting, I think, is Panama. Panama, Colombia, they're going to play, it's going to be Brazil, Panama, Nicaragua, Colombia, which is kind of interesting. Brazil's the only really non-baseball playing country there.
Mm-hmm.
It's basically ethnic Japanese, probably all high school.
The Brazilian team you're talking about.
Yeah, from Sao Paulo mostly. Panama, I guess, is going to be the winner. Panama's got some great baseball playing. They've got a great tradition there. They might, if they're lucky, Bruce Chen might pitch for Panama.
Yes,
okay, go ahead.
Oh, no, it's really going to be interesting to see how this plays out. But what I really wanted to discuss now was the fact that, A, that the U.S. team is not coming here, but, B, that the Cuban team is, and then C, the manager, this epic story that we have developing about who's going to manage the Japanese team.
Yeah, okay. So who is going to manage the Japanese team, John?
Well, I voted for you.
Yeah, well,
I put your name in.
But I followed Koji Akiyama's rule and said, if elected, I will not serve. If nominated, I will not stand.
Yeah, and I keep seeing these stories, and I had a couple that I was going to read on the way over, and I slept on the plane, so I didn't get a chance to read them. But apparently he keeps saying, hey, look, I told you I can't do it. I'm not going to do it. And, they kept saying, well, I read some quote where someone said, and I forgot who it was, maybe it was Ole Son himself, Ole Sadaharu Ole, said, well, I mean, that's just our opening discussions. I mean, we have to go in and, we're not going to take no for an answer the first time. We're going to go back in and, get another no, I suppose, is what he's saying, essentially.
Okay, well, let's say I think Akiyama did a great job. First is that he was a star, and you're going to be managing a bunch of stars, and I think to some degree that is important. Let's say he really will not do it. You know, they just say no, he's done. Who would you want to do it after him?
Who would I want to have out there? I have no idea, to be honest. What they've been saying is that no managers who are running any of the current 12 teams, the active managers are not going to participate in because they want to get their teams ready. So essentially they want to get someone who's retired, a retired manager. So we talked about Koji Yamamoto and the fact that, I think he's available and he's ready to do it. They just haven't asked him. And I don't think anyone wants him to do it, apparently, because they keep trying to go to an area where they've already been told no, and they keep knocking on that door, and no one's answering. So I don't know who I want to have do it. I have no idea.
Last time they wanted Hoshino to do it after the Beijing disaster because he was, somebody had a picture of him in a Japan uniform, and they thought maybe he might still be wearing it for some chance. Uniform, we'll have to buy him a new one. So, yeah, that's... I would like to see. I think the discussion has basically been no active manager should be in charge, but since O is the chairman of SoftBank, he probably thinks he can lean on Akiyama to do it. Now, I'd be happy if it was Hara again. He did a fine job last time, I think.
Mm-hmm.
I would also be happy if Hisanobu Watanabe did it. You know, if they asked him, I didn't have a chance to ask him today. I was focusing on some other things, but I did feel like coming up. He asked you, would you really, you know, say no, thank you, I'm not going to do it. Other than that, I don't see a big candidate in Japan. You know, you have failures. The other guy, I guess, I would pick if I had to. Hara Watanabe, it would be Junji Ogawa of the Swallows. I think he'd do okay as well.
Yeah, and again, we're talking about active guys. I don't know, you know, from the inactive list, who would we take? I mean, Ochai, I don't think he's that kind of guy. I think we discussed that on the show before.
I think he's a good manager with motivated players. I don't think he's any good at motivating people, but he's a harsh, you know, he's a harsh reality guy. You know, this is the way the game is. Tough it if you don't like it. This is what we're here for. And he'd be talking to people who get the message. I think, you know, he'd be talking to guys who speak the same language as him in that we're here to win. I think he'd be okay. I think my reason for not wanting Ochai is just personal indifference towards him as a human being. I just don't really get what he's do.
And on that note, we'll roll right along with the last 2 minutes. We'll talk about something that came up on the Facebook page. Now, a lot of people remember that at the beginning of the season, I predicted that Alex Ramirez would not reach 2,000 hits. And as soon as he got to about an area where you got 15 hits left to go, I started getting messages on the Facebook page saying, hey, John, remember you bet Jim Allen that Ramirez wouldn't reach 2,000 hits, and he only needs 15 now. And there's been sort of a countdown that's been going on. And so now he needs 8 hits in 8 games to get to 2,000. Now, let me tell you, I like my money, and I like saving it. And, you know, the biggest thing is I'll be able to go out and have dinner with my buddy Jim. So it really doesn't matter who pays. I'm rooting for Ramirez to get to 2,000 hits. But, you know, I also think that if he gets to 2,000 hits this year, then he might hang them up and that we might lose him for next year.
300 home runs coming up as well. Is it 400 home runs? However many home runs he's got. He's closing on that. I'll just tell you.
Okay, well, I'm just kind of worried because he's suffered some injuries. He hasn't been the same guy the past 2 seasons, and I think, you know, if he gets to the 2,000 hit mark, maybe he's not getting any younger.
It's 22 home runs, and that's not looking like next year's. That looks like a 2014 do-it-yourself project. So
do-it-yourself. So I just want everybody to know I am rooting for Ramirez to get there. You know, I'll be able to have dinner with my buddy Jim. Doesn't really matter if he pays or if I pay. It's the quality time that we get to share. What's that?
It matters to me.
It matters to me.
Alex Ramirez, whether you pay or me or I pay.
Now, I know that he came out of a game on Sunday because he hurt his left knee, so we'll hope that that's all right. I hope he gets well soon. I hope he gets back in there. There was a comment also on the Facebook page from last week's show in that Michael Westbay chimed in and said that Glenn Braggs, the former slugger with the Yokohama Bay Stars, had a farewell ceremony, mostly because it wasn't because of his career here, obviously. It's because the owner of the club at the time was in love with him, is what Michael said.
A little manly affection there. Or maybe because his wife used to sing with In Vogue or something. I don't know.
Yeah, veritable man crush. But now we did get a question this week, but it came in a little bit too late, so we'll work on it next week. Send your questions to yakyujohn@gmail.com and send MP3s, and we'll play them on the show because we'd love to hear your voice.
Thanks a lot for listening.
Thank you very much, and we'll talk to you next week. Enjoy your baseball.
Bye.